What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of our 2024 draft countdown of the offensive tackles. Joining me again is Chris Aguilera. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to get into the group yet again.
Yeah, so great discussion in that first episode, by the way. Chris really knows this stuff. You can listen to him when you want on the Deep Cover Pod with our friend Michael Crawford. Kerry Stevenson is also on that show. Highly recommend you give that show a try. It does not get nearly the attention it deserves, and it's one of the ones with really good analysts in the Baltimore area. A lot of great Baltimore content on football, and people know Coach Evans, and they know a lot of the other ones that are out there. A lot of James Ogden stuff getting some of the attention it deserves now. But those guys have a great show, and I highly recommend you give it a listen. But we do want to go over our 10 down to 7 selections for each of us. And that includes an adjustment by you, because apparently you're using bullets and not a numbered list before, right?
Yeah, so I mentioned Roger Rosengarten as my number 10 guy. He was supposed to be an honorable mention. So my number 10 guy is actually Kingsley Suomatia. He's my number 10 guy. Jordan Morgan's my number 9. Graham Barton is my number 8. And Tyler Guyton is my number 7.
Okay, and I've got a slightly different group. I've got Patrick Paul at number 10. Again, this list is for the Ravens. Patrick Paul, of course, is somebody that needs a one-year ramp-up period. Jordan Morgan, Kingsley Suomataia, and Tyler Guyton at number 7, who we both kind of liked, obviously, out there. We put the gun to Chris's head at the very end of the episode and asked him of those bottom 4 guys, who would he pick between Guyton, Suomataia, Morgan, and Patrick Paul, because I'm giving him my guy then. And you said?
Tyler Guyton.
And I'm with Tyler Guyton, too. And we didn't have to contradict our list, which is always nice when we get to that point. But we're down to number 6, and this offensive tackle class, these next 6 guys definitely all go into the first round, and I think we all have the same – we're going to have the same 6 names in some potentially different order. But who's your number 6 guy?
My number 6 guy is Amarius Mims out of Georgia. Obviously, you know, an athletic freak again, you know, like we've been saying for some other guys. But this guy might be the freakiest of the freaks. You look at his measurables. You look at his testing. Even though he got hurt at the combine, you know, he still tested incredibly. So with Amarius Mims, obviously he has the talent, has the skills, has the athletic gifts. Thing with him is, doesn't have the starts. You know, we talked about Jordan Morgan. We talked about Patrick Paul. You know, those guys are triple, quadruple, that have more games under them than Mims does. Mims only has 8 starts under his belt. 8 starts for a guy who's going to probably be a first round pick. Like, that's unheard of. But that's how good this guy's athletic skills are. And I think there's a clear line when you go from watching Tyler Guyton, who's we left off, number 7 guy. I think there's a clear gap when you watch the tape of Tyler Guyton and then Amarius Mims. when you watch Amarius Mims, you're like, oh, okay, this is a different tier that we're on right now. You know, you see the athletic skills jump out at you. You know, you could tell he's a former five-star recruit. Guy, obviously, I talked about the limited games that he's played, but the frame that he has, the power that he has, the movement skills for a guy that's that big, you know, he's truly a dancing bear. And I think with him, something that Nate Tice of the Athletic said, there are players who are raw, and then there are players who are inexperienced. I don't think Amarius Mims is raw. I think he's inexperienced. And I think the more games that he has under his belt, the sky is truly the limit for this guy. And I do think he's someone who can possibly flip over to the left side too, because that's how much I think of his athletic skills.
Terrific lateral movement is apparent, both on tape. And I thought he did one of the lateral movement drills, but I might be wrong about that. 6'8", 340, 36 and an eighth inch arms. Gifts like that do not come. They just do not come to anybody but the luckiest people on earth. 5'07" and the 40, that's perfectly fine for his size there. Good broad jump. For some reason, he had a bad vertical and a good broad. I was kind of wondering when his injury occurred. Do you remember at the combine when it happened?
I think it was after his 40, actually, where he came up limping.
And the other just completely unfair thing is the guy won't even be 22 until October. So in terms of age-wise, you're going to watch this guy grow into that frame, and he might carry more than 340 at some point. You hate to say this at this point in time, but in terms of the upside, in terms of the frame he brings to the game, I don't think really anybody, including Jonathan Ogden, has brought any more to the position. You know, Ogden was at his time probably even more freakish in terms of relative size and athleticism, because you see a bunch of 6'8", 320 to 340 guys in this draft, but just an incredible combination of everything, all athleticism and age. 803 total college snaps, all at right tackle in 3 years at Georgia. It is probably the least you will ever see for a round one prospect at offensive tackle. I think you covered that pretty well. Had a microscopic pressure rate allowed, 99.2% pass blocking efficiency, 97.5% in true pass sets. There is one thing about him that he's getting by with at this point is he's kind of depending on his monolithic size to generate some of those great pass block results. Not all of it, but some of it. If you think about one of the really monolithic guys other than Ogden in Ravens history, go back to Bryant McKinney, a guy who was just absolutely huge. And that was a big part is that McKinney didn't have great feet. McKinney had good length and he was able to push a guy 12 to 6, but he definitely didn't have the good feet. He made hay because he was so darn big and so difficult to get around. One of the things I love about Mims, he doesn't really get himself into trouble with penalties. And he could be a guy where he'd be raw and he'd be necktying guys who are getting the edge on him. It just doesn't happen all that time that guys could get to the edge on him even. He gets his hands out there, he strikes, and that pass rush plan is over. Whatever it was, it is not that anymore. So yeah. The guy is trying to recover. Watch the cut-up of Georgia Tech. Now, that was one of his best pass-blocking games of the season, but there were a few things about it. He definitely is not a slow-death tackle. He's not one of these guys who gets bull-rushed at all. He's a guy who maintains a ton of space in the pocket, which, again, I think would be a very fresh perspective for Lamar to have more space back there. He can deal with the bumping from the blind side on the right side in particular. It'd be nice to keep that open. He got off, I thought very quickly into level two, pancaked the Georgia Tech player while keeping his feet. Now, why do I mention that? Offensive linemen who are bigger players in particular frequently will get lungy versus smaller, quicker players in level two. You're nodding your head. I know we're on a podcast here, but this is, oftentimes a linebacker or a safety or corner is going to be much quicker and slippery, and an offensive lineman will feel like he needs to lunge. Well, not Mims. He has these enormous vine-like arms. He'll go out and he'll push you out of your position, maintain his feet like a wide receiver would on a pass block. And it's one thing, pass block or a run block. Look at a player like Miles Boykin a few years ago, who's an excellent run blocker, and you have a guy who maintains his feet and can pivot like a right guard can to open the front gate on a run play. So I was very impressed with that in Mims being able to maintain his feet on that particular play. Had a nice 12-6 block to get Kevin Harris by the pocket. Did a good job of looking for work. It's funny how a guy like Mims creates a bubble over tackle sometimes. There's not supposed to be a bubble over tackle in our guys, by the way. It's supposed to be someone engaged with that as a pass blocker. But occasionally with a player like Mims, nobody really wants to do it. Everyone wants to stunt or they want to, you know, drop to cover or whatever they might do. They can't do it on their own. But more times than you would think, Mims didn't really have anyone to block directly, look for work very effectively, run and pass. I thought he did that. So I think there is still probably a 75% chance he stays at right tackle as a pro. But I would take the chance on if there's a 25% chance he could become a good left tackle at the NFL level, it's going to be an amazing payoff if he does. And I think he'll be taken in the top 15 to 20. If somehow that doesn't happen and the Ravens get a shot at him, I definitely would be running the card up to the podium.
Yeah, it is. To me, it's a no-brainer. When you put the talent, when you just stack it up, talent, age, just the raw ability that he has right now, it makes the perfect sense for a pick at 30. It's a no-brainer, in my opinion. Now, the only thing with him is he going to be able to overcome the injury bugs? You know, he had surgery in season, came back, played a couple of games, and then during the playoff game, got injured again in the first quarter against Alabama. And then, obviously, we spoke about it earlier, at the combine, got injured yet again during the combine training. So are these just little nicks and you know, nagging things, or is it going to be a long-term issue that he's going to have to deal with for his career? Because we've seen guys be healthy throughout their whole career and then come to the Ravens and then get, you know, be bombarded with injuries.
And we've seen other players the Ravens have drafted, even with an injury history, and really regretted it. And Breshad Perriman would probably be the big one that comes to mind in terms of a first-round pick for me.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, Mims also my number six guy, so who's your number five guy?
My number five guy is Talisi Fuaga out of Oregon State. I really love him. He might have the most fun tape out of this whole group. Just violent, nasty finisher. Played at right tackle. Was a team captain over the last two seasons. And he's just, there are some guys that when you watch them touch other players, there's a different kind of strength that's behind it. And Fuaga has that kind of strength where you see him just touch defensive linemen. And they're going to the ground. And that's like an elite level strength that he has, in my opinion. It's just in his hands and able to drive people off the ball. But don't let that confuse you either, because a lot of times those types of the more powerful guys, you'll think they're lumberers and, you know, they can't move. This dude has movement skills as well. Like he can move. He's more nimble than you would expect someone who's 335 pounds to move. So I really liked his feet. I was surprised because in high school, he didn't even play tackle in high school. He was a guard in high school and then moved out to tackle at Oregon State. And usually you don't see that switch to go from a high school guard to a college offensive tackle. And I know a lot of people who are saying, you know, he can be moved on into the inside. And I've seen comparisons to Mike Iupati, who was the 49ers guard for a long time. But I think he can hang at tackle. And I really, really loved his tape.
I did too. And I have him at number, let me make sure. It's either four or five. Let me see here for a second. I have him at number five also. And okay, where do they even start? Let's start with the position he ends up at, because it's one of the really big items to decide on here. He is I would just go ahead and say, I think if he moved to guard right away, I'd probably be very strongly considering what his Hall of Fame chances were pretty darn early on. Now, that said, tackles have more value. And so whoever drafts him in the first round, which is probably going to be in the top 15 picks, is going to be somebody, or 20 anyway, is going to be somebody who wants to maximize his value probably by playing him at right tackle, just magnifying his impact on the game to start with. He's He's an unbelievable, he's a very good pass blocker who is an unbelievable run blocker. And that's how I would describe the guy. Does not have the elite arm length you expect at left tackle. So I really don't think that move is in his future. I don't think he'll move to the left side. I think right tackle or potentially either guard spot. Could be left guard, could be right guard. He certainly has plenty of the length necessary to play right guard. And if there's anybody who generates torque on the inside to play right guard, it would be him. I totally trust him. His penalties increased to 8 in 2023. What I don't have is what those were. So if there's a bunch of pre-snap fouls, if there's a bunch of, you know, 5 false starts, I don't really care that much about it. They'll correct that. If it's a bunch of holding flags or it's a bunch of IDPs are probably correctable also, but I'm more concerned about it in terms of really not having the proper internal clock to deal with the RPO plays being run behind you. You got to be careful about that at the NFL level because those penalties are very serious. But in terms of his pass blocking, only allowed 12 pressure events in 2023. Pass blocking efficiency was over 98%. Has a great get off that I think would work well, whether he plays guard or tackle. If he wants to crash a defensive tackle, moving as quickly off the ball as he does, he'll be very effective. He's a very good guy at climbing. You know, I didn't expect to necessarily see that, but that's something you want at any position, but it's very, very valuable at guard if you're on a double team block with the center or the tackle, either way, and you create a situation very quickly where you're able to climb out of that. And he's certainly a guy who has quick movement skills to do that. I guess the question I would have for you in terms of sticking at the tackle is this, Chris, and I'll just pose it this way, is do you think he's ready to deal with the elite hand placement and length of NFL edge defenders given his own length shortcomings? Not you know, moderate length, let's put it that way.
I think he can, just because usually when you have a guy who has those length concerns, they're usually lighter, smaller and lighter guys. With him, he's powerful guy. So he's not really concerned about getting bulled or getting bullied back. I think you just have to preach patience when it comes to just let it hit in your mark and letting the defender come to you. You know, I think that is going to be big for him. Just trusting his ability to anchor down and, you know, be stout enough to handle those bull rushes if they come at him.
He's 6'6", 324. He does also have more of that guard pear-shaped body. And I left him with the tackles, and obviously I had him ranked number 5, just like you did. So I love him. I think he can be a right tackle. He's probably not the ideal guy for the Ravens, given the positions he might play. So I don't really think he's going to move to left tackle. Now, it's not even going to be a problem because he's going to be long gone by the time the Ravens pick at 30. So it's not even a concern they have to have. And that's why I just left him in the rankings where I had him. But watch the cut up of Oregon. There were a few things here. I think it looked for work very well, climbed well, had a very nice stunt exchange. And then on that stunt exchange, he still worked his guy back to 6 o'clock in the pocket, that past that back pylon where he would be trouble. Gives very little ground when he mirrors. So a lot of what I mean by that, a lot of tackles, in order to mirror, they have to take, you know, 10 and 12 degree steps backwards in order to maintain their mirror. If you look at Ronnie Stanley, he's about making that exchange a lot of the time. And it's been tremendously valuable. It's a winning strategy, but it's even better if you can maintain your mirror out, you know, far away from the quarterback, so the cone doesn't get interrupted. He has a little bit of room to move back there. Those are nice things. Anyway, Fuaga is not a guy who gives ground in the pocket at all. He was pancaked on a bull rush by Jordan Birch. It was one where he backed up through traffic. That one I didn't really blame on him. But it did get beaten inside by a spin move by number one, again, Jordan Birch, for the initial pressure on what would have been a quarterback hit. I don't remember if PFF actually charged him with a quarterback hit, but that's what it was in that particular case. If they called it a hurry, it's because someone else finished the hit, but it's his quarterback hit, believe me, when you watch that tape. Anyway, other than that, I mean, I love the guy. He's not the Ravens' problem in a certain case because he's going to be long gone by the time the Ravens pick.
Yeah, and, you know, just to add one more point on him, he's probably my favorite finisher in this draft. And when I say finisher, I mean, like a closer, like a Mariano Rivera type.
Yep.
When there are certain pass rushers that you see that with, we see that with you know, TJ Watt. We see that with Chris Jones, where the game is on the line, you need to play. I saw that with Fuaga. You know, fourth quarter, need to run the clock out, and you can just see him up the intensity, and he's kind of putting it on his back, like, just run behind me, like, I got this. And you see him up the ante a little bit, and I love that from players who bring that type of intensity when the game is on the line.
Yeah, that's a great new definition of finisher there, because a lot of people would assume finishing a block, which also is something Fuaga is great at. He certainly could fall on you. And I did love that. And I also, is what would make Fuaga a great fourth quarter player if in this fantasy landing were somehow to drop to the Ravens, would be the fact that the Ravens run the ball a lot, and he's going to push around defenders for four quarters a game. Imagine the combination of Lamar Jackson's elusiveness, handing the ball sometimes to Derrick Henry with his power. You got some poor defensive end who's been facing Fuaga the whole day, and he's having a fall on him at the end of a bunch of plays. And, you know, from that perspective, I would love him on the Ravens, but ain't happening, folks. There are some of these other guys, though, who you know, Marius Mims, Tyler Guyton, Kingsley Suamataia are people who could bring that someday to the Ravens. So it's still pretty exciting.
Yeah.
All right, number four, who's your guy?
It is J.C. Latham out of Alabama, 6'6", 260, former five-star recruit, saw action early on. And, you know, whenever you see Alabama guys seeing action early on, you know those guys are special because they just have five-star after five-star. So if you can come in as a freshman and get playing time, that is huge. And, you know, He didn't disappoint, in my opinion. He's a guy came in this last season, added on 25 extra pounds of muscle just to try to get his NFL body for this season. And, you know, it may not sound like a lot for people, but for a college kid to take that initiative and to add good weight, because it wasn't bad weight. So for a college kid to do that going into his junior season, like, that just shows me a guy who wants to work at his craft, wants to be the best at his craft. And this is, it's such a crapshoot because we see tape and we're like, oh, this guy's gonna be good, like, he's got to be good, but you don't see behind the scenes. And that's mostly what makes these guys successful, is what they do on their spare time, not what they do when they're just at the facility. So a college kid who's willing to put in that type of work, I like that. That really gets my antennas up for a player like that. And then when you pop in the tape, we talked about Fuaga. Fuaga is second when it comes to the most powerful guy in this draft. For me, J.C. Latham is the most powerful guy in this draft. You see him consistently moving guys off the ball. Again, just like Fuaga, yeah, he has that power profile, but he also has really impressive feet. You know, his feet, I was not expecting him to move the way that he did. And, you know, obviously he's still, you know, one of the youngest guys in this draft. I mean, he's just turned 21 a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
So these guys are incredibly young, but they're incredibly refined he looks like a guy that's been in college for 6 years. Like, just physically, it doesn't look real. Like, it's, I can't believe this guy is just only a junior. So, you know, it's a lot to love from his tape from a physical standpoint. Now, that's not to say that there aren't any negatives on his tape. I mean, sometimes you do see some blunders when it comes to just recognizing stunts, picking up blitzes. I know he had that, you know, terrible ending to the season where he just got bull rushed back and, you know, pretty much picked up at the end of the Michigan game on the fourth down play. And, you know, that sticks out in people's head. But when you look at his game from the totality of it, it's very, very intriguing. And if he somehow falls to 30, you know, I don't think it'll happen. But if he does, like, that is my dream, one of my dream picks, him and another guy that we'll talk about soon.
Yeah, it's not happening. but you know, I want to piggyback off something you said that's really, really good about this, is the guy is just way ahead of himself in terms of learning. And you mentioned putting on the good weight is one good thing. You know, the thing that strikes me in watching him play is the guy's incredibly polished as a left tackle. You know, and part of it is I'm watching a whole bunch of other left tackles who are in their developmental stages. They're still learning, or they're Mims and they've got a few starts, or they're, you know, one of these other guys who's played exclusively right tackle, or they're people, the guy at Yale who's got almost no, you know, no experience against real human beings or real football sized players, you know, or any of these things. But Latham has a remarkable amount of polish in his game. I mean, he's a very good hand fighter already. I think that's probably something he got at IMG Academy. You know, that's a really well-known high school football program that he went to. If he didn't, he might have before he went to Alabama got, or while he's at Alabama, of course, he might have gotten the proper coaching there during the offseason to try and move his game forward. But I, something has gone on here because you rarely
save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
See a guy, a three-year player with this kind of polish. I watched a cut-up from Texas A&M. Various good things happened, but one of the nice things about having Texas A&M is you got Edgerrin Cooper on the field again, and he had an excellent handoff where he picked up Cooper. I think I had Texas Tech on there. I might have said Edgerrin Cooper's there. Edgerrin Cooper's Texas A&M, right?
Yeah, Texas A&M.
Correct. I hope I didn't say that wrong in the first show, but excellent grip strength, holds on, rep over a lot of the time. He gets on the inside, gets on in good spots. That's what we mean by polish, by the way, in terms of hand placement. He's got quick hands. He goes to the chest plate sometimes. He goes to grab on the inside of the armpit, which is a very vulnerable area for pass rushers if they get latched onto there. And there's usually nothing they can do once the offensive lineman has their hands on them inside there. I did see him get off balance and fall forward to lose another block where the ball was out quickly. It wasn't pressure, but it's the kind of thing that worries me a little bit with the taller player. I only saw it once, so I did not see balance issues. I don't think any scouting reports be something that was mentioned as a general problem for him. He had consecutive plays, and I love this, where he pancaked a player riding him down that was trying to beat him to the outside. And it really looked like, in Latham's case, I can believe this. Some of the other players, I think this was just luck that this happened. He baited them into a 12-6 block. So he baited them into a speed rush to the outside. Immediately he knew he had them. And not only did he just use his length to push him by the pocket, which would be the normal reaction for a kind of slow-footed player, but he was on it like a cat because he knew it was coming. He'd engineered it and rode him right to the ground. Yeah. Yeah, great play there. He's a little slow moving to level two to make blocks. So there's some heavy footedness maybe in the run game that could be difficult. But I thought his proportionality is very good in terms of top to bottom, where his weight is. It's what you'd want out of a tackle, what you expect out of a very long tackle. And he did allow one pressure to a safety when he didn't pick up the blitz in the game. But otherwise, I thought he was good. Really good job of the punches. I can't say enough about that. It's not a pure power game that he plays like Mims or like Guyton, where they are destroying a rep with pure power in terms of getting a punch exactly well placed to a good spot. He's more of a finesse player despite his size in terms of what he's capable of putting power, but he doesn't always go to that move, certainly. So loved him a lot. Pressure rate got a little worse from 22 to 23, but he also cut his penalties from 11 to 7. And that had been something that had been kind of dogging him through his career. So I was happy to say this. This is the only buyer beware element I have for this. NFL draft buzz, if you go there. And generally speaking, by the way, I would really tell you don't bother with the scouting reports on NFL draft buzz. They look like they're written by either the player's former coach or the player's agent. Those are the two people who could have written, you know, these glowing reviews out there, but they do a very good job of collecting information on measurables that I like to get when I don't have it from other places. And they have projected number and other 40s and this and that, and they put it together. They do a pretty good job of that. And they have a similarity score they use to find the most similar players. And his most similar was Trevor Penning.
So oh, wow.
That's unfortunate. but otherwise, I think the guy is an outstanding player. Don't think he'll make it to 30. If he somehow did, boy, you know, that's another guy you run up the card for. But I think he will stay at left tackle would be my guess in the NFL.
Oh, right tackle or left tackle?
No, left. Right. Oh,
he didn't play left tackle at Alabama. He was on a right.
I'm sorry, you're right. Right tackle. Some of these guys, Guyton and Latham in particular, I sometimes get confused. But Latham, I think he will actually move to left tackle in the NFL, would be my guess based on the
policy. I think he can too. I think a lot of people see the size and they're like, oh, yeah, that's a right tackle. But to me, that's an archaic way of thinking. If you just look at the guy's build and say, oh, yeah, that's a right tackle. Like, no, I think he has the feet to move over to the left side. And he came into Alabama as a left tackle. And the reason why they kept him there, because he was supposed to move after the 2022 season, he was supposed to move over to left tackle. Once Evan Neal, I forgot who else was there. But Saban decided to keep him there just to keep the continuity of the line. And that's the main reason why he didn't move over to left tackle. So I think he's clearly capable of being able to make that move.
All right. And you had him at number three as well. So we got now two guys left. Sorry, three guys left. We both had Latham at number four. Who's your number three guy?
My number three guy is Troy Fautanu, I believe that's how you say it, from Washington. The second Washington guy I'll speak about today. This guy, he is my favorite tackle in this class. I love watching his tape. You put on the tape and he looks like a pudgy little guard. But then you watch him play and you see the feet and the movement skills of a left tackle. And, you know, the arm length, he has 34.5-inch arms, I believe it is. Movement skills, he moves like a tight end. If you watch his, just go Google or go put in YouTube his combine workout, and you know, there you could say, oh, combine workouts don't matter, but you put it on and you see his movements because then you're like, this guy is a tight end, like that's what it looks like the way he's moving. And you know, when you have those feet, because we've spoken about other tackles who have great feet, but this guy has great feet and probably the most impressive hand fighting that I've seen in this class. He's like Neo from the Matrix with his hand movements. And it's just constantly repositioning, constantly getting his hands right back in the chest plate. If a defender tries to hit him, defenders try to long arm him, he's snatching that arm. It's kind of like jiu-jitsu where he's just taking limbs from edge defenders. And I love that because to me, that shows that you're working at your craft. You're not just depending on physical skills. You're taking the game to a mental level in order to pair with the physical ability that you already have. And to me, that's just, I love when players in college are able to take it to the next level when it comes to their craft and what they've been working on.
All right, outstanding. We have a matched board, pretty much it looks like, from 5-1, because I can't believe we don't have the same number one guy here. So, Fautanu, also my number three guy, I do have a question as to whether he's going to stay at tackle or move to guard, but he moves around extremely well. And I probably thought it was more likely that he would stick at left tackle after watching the tape of him than I did before. Really liked what I saw there. He moves like a cat moving around to try and make blocks. And it's not like he has everything really figured out there, but he does have the length to dominate inside. Still the fine hand fighter, as you mentioned. I left him at tackle because I think whoever drafts him obviously wants to get tackle value out of him. They really want to get left tackle value out of him. I think, you know, if the Ravens somehow got him, and I know one of our friends at PFF is very excited, Gordon McGinnis, would be very excited about him coming to the Ravens somehow, and had one mock draft he did where the Ravens traded every pick they had to move up to number 17 and get the title. So it would be exciting if it worked out that way. It won't, of course. So in some sense, any kind of positional change is somebody else's problem. Let me give you one reason why that's not actually 100% true. The Ravens cannot afford can ill afford for one of the guys who has legitimate left tackle or even right tackle traits to go to a team that's thinking about converting him to guard, and it's okay moving him to guard, because that actually increases the scarcity of remaining tackles, not just because that guy's gone, but because the rest of the league who needs left tackles has one less guy to draft. And that means if you're waiting to the second round at Kingsley Suamataia and you're hoping to get him at 40, your chance to get him at 40 just went down, and you might have to draft him at 30 now and overdraft him. So that's one of the things we'll be watching on draft night on the show is, you know, did somebody get drafted to a team where they're going to be played not at tackle? And did that change the landscape of the competitiveness for tackle as we go through this? So from that perspective only, I think where he ends up is actually important to the Ravens and how they do it. And obviously, it's important to see wide receivers go off the board too instead of tackles. But that's a big one. Loved his cut up versus Utah. I won't go into details on that specifically. Loved him in the run game. There's a lot to like. And, you know, I originally kind of scoffed at Gordon with his number 17 trade the whole draft for him kind of thing. It's not reasonable that the Ravens would do that with all the holes they have. But at least I understand that it was done in a very good natured way that he really loves Troy Fontano. And I do too. He's a very fine athlete. All right, so we got, I think, the same two guys at the top, unless you surprise me with somebody that would really be a shocker. But who's your number two guy?
My number two guy is Olu Fashanu from Penn State. He's a guy who could have possibly been the number one offensive tackle if he came out last year, but decided to go back to school, incredibly young, team captain, 21 starts. Been a starter since day one at Penn State. What you like about him is his pass blocking. You know, his pass blocking is so refined and high level for a player that's so young. He has obviously, you put the tape on, you see the movement skills. Obviously, he's a little bit light. I don't think he's quite up there yet with his grown man body like we see with a J.C. Latham. I think there's still more to add on to the frame, a little more sand in his pants. And you see that sometimes with dealing with more powerful rushers, specifically the Ohio State guy, 40-something, I forget his number. But that's a power-based player. And we've seen it with Ronnie Stanley. You know, if defenders know that they can get inside your chest and drive you back, they're going to do it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I think he hasn't reached that level of maturity yet, just physically speaking, but the athletic skills, the pass blocking, the tools are all there. And it's just a point of him just getting stronger, in my opinion, in order to really reach the ceiling of where most people think he can go.
Incredible the number of 21-year-olds we have in this draft who are at this kind of level. He won't be 22 until December. I mean, he's going to play almost the entire season at age 21. And you're completely right on the frame. It's, you know, one of the key points that I had is that at 6'6", 312, he's going to get pushed around. And there's been a lot of comments made. I looked at a cut up of Michigan. I didn't see a specific speed to power move, but that's something a lot of NFL edge rushers are going to want to go and show him the speed move, you know, convert to power, and get a great bull on him or just push him directly into the cone where the quarterback will be obstructed there. His game against Michigan in 22. So I'm watching now I guess he was 20 then. Wait, 22. Actually, he's not 24. I guess he was 20 then. That's how old he would have been when this game was played. He looked fantastic. He had a very fast get off for a reach block where he pancaked the right defensive tackle. I didn't even see his number on the play, but it might have been Chris Jenkins. Great play against Chris Jenkins. Of course, he's going to go, in the second round this year, maybe, Chris Jenkins?
Yeah, around that.
Yeah. Nice stunt pickup on Chris Jenkins. He had a bunch of different good mirror plays versus Mike Morris. And Mike Morris was a guy who was in the draft last year. I don't remember where he ended up going, whether he just missed in terms of being the UDFA or he was drafted late. If you can find that out for me, that'd be great. If not, no big deal. But there were a lot of good things.
He went to Seattle.
Seattle, what round, do you know?
He was Fifth round.
Okay. So anyway, an NFL player, certainly with Jenkins, an NFL player as well in terms of the guys he's facing at Michigan. 10 pressure events all season. I know who the Ohio State guy you mentioned, number 44, Tui, right?
Yeah, JT's something.
Tui Maloa. Not sure exactly how you say his last name, but yeah, I had him on the list as one play where I'd seen that. So he had 10 pressure events the whole time. That one game he had, I think one game against Ohio State, he might have had 3 or 4 pressures allowed. It was the one time where he had a bunch of trouble in one game. So Fashanu to me is the second best pure pass blocker in this draft. And you can talk about all the other ancillary characteristics, but the already proven pass rush ability is the single most important draft talent you can have at that position. Yes, I'd love for him to be a great backside run blocker. Yes, I'd love for him to have the football IQ to pick up 2 blocks once in a while. Yes, I'd love for him to be able to climb to level 2. But those are all 1-point considerations in a world where the 10-point consideration is how good of a pass blocker he is already right now and ready to go. And Fashanu is that guy. I do think he'll grow into his body. I think he'll be okay as a rookie, and he'll be better as he gets better. He probably will be one of those guys like Joe Staley, who it takes – a year and maybe even 2 to really realize his full potential as a player just because of his age. But he's right there and ready to go right now. And a day one starter, which is something you can't say about everybody on this list.
Yeah, I agree. There are going to be some bumps early on, but you'll live with those because the reward that you're going to get 2-3 years down the line is definitely going to be worth it, in my opinion.
All right. And again, kind of a fantasy to think the Ravens get him would be wonderful. If there's somehow a pot mask video, I hope they won't, say no as they did the Laramie Tunsil. And honestly, the Tunsil standing thing, they got a good player. It just didn't work out with the injury to Ronnie, obviously, but the Ravens got a good player in the deal. So anyway, let's talk about number one.
Number one, Frank Crum, Wyoming.
There you go. Exactly what I was expecting. Damn it. You got my pick.
No, it's Joe Alt. Joe Alt, has the NFL bloodlines, a son of former Chiefs offensive lineman, from former first round pick John Alt, been a team captain for them, started another guy who started from day one, even younger than Fashanu, which is crazy. He just turned 21 in February. So, not only is this guy young, but he has the NFL body. He looks like a guy who's been on campus for 5 years. He does not look like he's that young, when just looking from a physical standpoint. And then not only physically does he not look young, his play style doesn't lend itself to somebody who's young. He looks like he's been playing the position for the last 10 years. And that is not the case, because even if you go back to high school, he was playing quarterback, he was playing tight end, and that was a strategic move from his dad. His dad wanted him to develop the footwork of a different types of position. He didn't want him to be an offensive lineman growing up, because he felt like he was just going to be slow-footed. And if he was an athlete first, then, because he's like, this kid's got my genes, he's going to be huge. He's going to have to make this switch to offensive tackle or somewhere on the offensive line. So let me make this kid play a different position growing up so he can have that athleticism. And you see it on tape. You see he's clearly an athlete on tape. And just the technical refinement that he has, you can tell that he's put in a ton of work with his dad. Great size, great build. The only thing that's just a little bit strange for me is his stance. Like, I can't stand his stance because he has his ass about 2 feet higher than everybody else, because he just can't get it down for whatever reason. So, but other than that, like, this dude is, he's not an all-time prospect, but he's clearly, for me, the best offensive tackle in this class.
Yeah, I think he probably would be one of the all-time prospects at left tackle, just in terms of how much ahead of the class he is. But it's a great class, and to be at number one in this class is enough in of itself. I love the lifers that you referred to before, the guys who come from the football families here. You know, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. is in this draft and really shows traits of a guy who's way more polished. Leatu Latu, I don't know if he has family connection in the NFL or not already, but incredible polish. You see that in him. You see it in the guy Ellis, the pass rusher, who's ahead of where he is right now because he's got like four family members who played at least in a camp in the NFL. So you got a lot of guys there.
But Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, that's a good one. Good one. Yeah. Right at the top of the draft there. His run blocking is as good as his pass blocking. His pass blocking blocks out the sun pretty much. So I didn't spend a lot of time looking at trying to come up with 20 bullet points that I really wanted to hit on Joe Alt because he's unfortunately not anyone the Ravens get to have. So, it'd be time wasted on a spot where it doesn't really fit in strategically to where the Ravens, have a choice in the matter. So their agency will be taken away by another team who will draft him at number 5 or number 6, perhaps, depending on how the board falls. That he goes right there, 5 or 6, maybe Marvin Harrison 4.
With the Chargers, they have Harbaugh there. They have Greg Roman. So I would never cross out offensive linemen going to them.
Okay. All right. I think I'd be pretty happy. I think they've got Slater at left tackle right now. He's already had some postseason honors. A little bit short armed. I'm sure he could play on the right side. I'm sure Alt could play on the right side if he needed to for a year. But if you've got Alt, I think he moves to the left side. He moves Slater to the right side more than likely if he did end up going to San Diego. And that's probably a reason why San Diego gets less marginal value from him. They leave him for somebody else. If I'm them, I'm trading that pick. I'm trying to flip that pick to somebody who wants it. But then I realize that the cost of that is going to be taking a drop down from maybe Harrison Jr. down to Odunze or somebody, if you're going to be practical about who could move up and provide the capital for that move. All right, absolute pleasure going through this list with you, Chris. Just so much fun doing it. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
You can find me on Twitter at Chris Just Joking. Also, like I said, I'm on the Deep Cover podcast with Michael Crawford, Kerry Stevenson. I'm also on the Ravens Roundup show with Coach Evans, Rogue Pod, OTR Mike, and also the Lunch Break Hot Take crew. And we do that every Monday at 9 p.m. on Sip to Tally. So you can catch me there. You can catch me on Deep Cover and catch me on Twitter.
Make sure you give – we talked a little bit about making sure you give a listen to Deep Cover. Make sure you give a subscribe out there. I think he's mostly YouTube right now. He doesn't do podcasts as much on Sip to Tally, right? It's all YouTube?
Yeah, it's YouTube.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Make sure you give that a subscription. It's easy. You get in your box. Then you'll get to see it. And I find it's always interesting stuff when I take a look at it. I love Coach Evans' work, and I highly recommend it there. And I didn't know you were doing a show with him on a regular basis, but that's great. I know you guys are doing some stuff together for the draft, right?
Yeah, we're actually recording one tomorrow about the defensive backs in this class. So we've done offensive tackles, we've done edge defenders, we've done wide receivers, and tomorrow we're doing the DBs.
All right, very good. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. If you have an idea for a show, great. I want to hear from you. It's kind of open mic season until the beginning of training camp from between the end of the draft and then, but if you want to be part of the recollection series, remember that Raven that you loved and you don't hear as much about any day. You just want to talk about again one more time. Another person you can go to, and hopefully this brings some new people to the pod, go to your dad, go to your uncle, go to somebody else who's a little bit older than you, remembers the Ravens of the 90s and wants to talk about some player from that era. Those guys have forgotten. It's like all Ravens history started in 2000, the way Steelers history started with the Immaculate Reception. There's 40 years of bad Steeler football before that, and that's all forgotten. And, it's kind of sad that those guys are not remembered from that era. And in particular, the Ravens' first four seasons had some exciting up-and-coming players, some wide-open offense, some really exciting defense. If your dad or your uncle wants to talk about such a player from that era, if you're too young for that, that's great with me. And also, if you can show your dad or uncle how to get to my pod, just listening to it, I find usually by going to the website and clicking the play button is an easier thing for guys my age to do as opposed to downloading podcasts. That's a good way to do it too. So really appreciate your help, folks. Thanks for listening again. Chris, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.